So it's always a treat to have our good friend David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our part of the New York Times, with us. And we want to explore what the situation in Afghanistan right now means for the Obama doctrine in foreign policy. But we also want to explore a premise he wrote about: death and brutality in Syria and rising tensions in Iran. In both cases, the situation is reaching at least a rhetorical threshold calling for some kind of action. The Obama administration has said that Syria's President Bashar al-Assad must go and that Iran will not be permitted to become a nuclear power militarily. Republicans are calling for the U.S. to arm the Syrian rebels to counter weapons to the regime in Damascus coming from Russia. And David Sanger also sees an escalation of rhetoric inside the Beltway calling for the U.S. to give Israel weapons to make it easier to take out the developing Iranian nuclear threat. As I said, David Sanger is chief Washington correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. He's a contributor to WQXR's The Washington Report. David, welcome to the program on this Monday morning.
Good to be back with you, John.
So, first of all, before we get to Afghanistan, it seems to me there are thresholds here in Syria and Iran, at least on paper, look like they're calling for intervention. But you say the Obama administration has signaled not so fast, and it's more complicated anyway.
Well, that's right. I mean, when you think back about an Obama doctrine on the use of force, and not one that he is particularly well articulated, though he did some in the speech that he gave when he accepted the Nobel Peace Prize, but you just look at what he's done. What you discover is that in those cases, and it's a very narrow group, where he believes that there is a direct threat to the United States, he's willing to use unilateral force. Think of the bin Laden raid, for example. But that in almost all other cases, he's insisting on operating only within coalitions. And if the coalitions can't come together, he will pretty much come to the conclusion that the U.S. is not going to intervene. And that's what's happened in Syria. It did come together in Libya, and, you know, the outcome of that war was that it appeared to be a success in that we saw Gaddafi on the run fairly quickly, and ultimately he was killed and overthrown, and then, of course, killed. But what happened in the end was that the place turned into a fair bit of chaos, in part, I think, it's fair to say, because the Western allies were not on the ground. The president is clearly very, very hesitant after Iraq and Afghanistan to be in a position where the U.S. is on the ground and responsible for the outcomes.
Well, let me push you a little bit on the Syria question, because, you know, we armed the Contras during the Reagan administration. We armed the opposition in Iraq for much of the 90s. The Clinton doctrine, in fact, in Iraq was for regime change, even if they didn't, intervene militarily in a direct way until George W. Bush. With such an overwhelming humanitarian, it seems, argument for at least arming the rebels or giving them an even hand based on the fact that Russia is giving the government weapons, why is this such a difficult issue for the Obama administration?
You know, John, it's a very good question, and it's difficult because they're not entirely sure who it is they would be arming. There is a Free Syria Army, but it is not much of an army. It is a fairly loose group of tribes, ethnic groups who are wandering around with no command structure. And one thing that people have learned about arming rebels is that sometimes it can make the violence worse. And then when the conflict is over, you're never entirely sure how those weapons are going to be used.
And indeed, that's
the
Afghan story.
Here is Afghanistan.
Afghanistan, of course, exactly, the blowback issue. Let's talk about Israel and Iran for just a moment and then get to Afghanistan, because the headlines are very disturbing out of there this morning. Forget talks with Iran. They don't go anywhere. Just send a couple of bunker busters to Israel. They'll take care of the whole problem.
That is part of the rhetoric that you're hearing today. And, of course, the Israelis have asked for more equipment in the past. They asked President Bush in 2008, and he turned them down. And the concern here was that if the Israelis have the equipment, they will use it, and that they will use it somewhat prematurely. And President Obama's concern is that, in the end, a bombing attack on the Iranian facilities it doesn't solve anything. It only kicks it down the road, and it only makes the Iranian determination to get the program going again, but this time even further underground, all that much more solid.
And it,
so the president, I think, would prefer this mix of sanctions and covert action.
And indeed, an Israeli action with the tacit support of the Obama administration would crystallize this image we're seeing playing out in Afghanistan of the U.S. as something of a holy warrior or a desecrator of holy Qurans, that sort of thing. What do you make of this violence, and how more difficult does it make the withdrawal plans of the Obama administration from Afghanistan?
You know, I think it does make the withdrawal plan more difficult. Not that it would slow when the U.S. would come out, but that there's really no room for error right now in the American plan for transfer of responsibility to do the main combat roles to the Afghan military. And if you can't have enough trust that you can have American military planners working alongside the Afghans, then that whole plan collapses. And even as it was before this incident, there were many who had doubts that the Afghan military would be any place close to ready by the time they were supposed to take over the main combat role in 2013 and by the time the NATO forces were supposed to leave in 2014. Now, the U.S. will retain, it believes, some small force in Afghanistan, probably 10,000 to 15,000 people, probably behind high walls at Bagram Air Force Base. This is sort of a tripwire capability. But if you can't train the Afghan military, if they're not ready to do this themselves because you can't trust them enough to work alongside them, then I don't really see how the plan works.
And with the Quran burning issue as an opportunity for the Taliban to whip up anti-Western support, you basically leave Afghanistan practically in the state where you began, with it as a possible setting for terrorist activity against the West. David Sanger.
You do, John, but remember that the U.S. is a lot more skilled now at both watching how terror groups come together and striking them when they do.
Well, we got that going for us.
The chances that they would be able to do that in Afghanistan without being detected, I think, were a lot lower than 10 years ago.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, the New York Times, contributed to WQXR's The Washington Report. Thanks so much.